Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
Good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Well, it seems Fast and Furious is not just the name of a movie. It is the way that these shootings keep happening. I thought we'd have time to get over Buffalo, and now it's Texas, and we have elementary school kids dead this morning, unfortunately. We're going to talk about that and some other things. We have back with us Dr. Harvey Wolf Kushner, professor, Long Island University. Hi there. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Gretchen. How are you today?
I guess I'll just say aggravated. There's so many, adjectives right now, but sad and aggravated.
Right.
What about you?
Well, unfortunately, I live with this my adult life,
not
this particular event, but with this type of incidents, whether it's terrorism, whether it's mass shootings, or all these types of things. So that's something that I deal with, being running a criminal justice program. It's a daily event, thinking about this, even when it's not in the headlines. But this one, especially coming so close after Buffalo, sort of resonates in terms of, you try to get over one and then go on with everything, and then you have something like this. I don't have to say this. I mean, I think your listeners and you as well know from what we saw in Buffalo, what happened there and why it happened. And then here, with these kids, and then, it keeps on getting more and more troublesome. I mean, now we know that it was in one classroom. So, if you think of the horror that those children went through at that time, and what about those who fortunately escaped it and they're going to have to live with that the rest of their lives, and the parents? I mean, it's hard, right? There really isn't words to explain what evil this is, right? I mean, you want to attribute it to an evil that it's not human, but unfortunately, a human being did this, and we need to be able to deal with this. So there's a lot to unwrap about this, from gun laws, red flag laws, and how do we get a handle on this? How do we move on as a nation, right?
Right, exactly. So, I mean, we are talking daily about, although it seems to be less and less about the Russian-Ukraine war and South Korea shooting off missiles. North Korea, sorry, shooting off missiles. Right. And, what God only knows what with regards to China. But it seems like the enemy is from within. So,
go ahead. I'm sorry. It's interrupting.
No, go ahead, please.
Well, I think, yes, I think, we have multiple fronts that attack us. I mean, whether it's from the outside, the inside, I think you're right. I mean, you can't ignore that there are threats to, let's say, the home front from outside, and there are certainly threats from inside. I specialize mainly, in my research and my dealings from threats from outside, but I don't disregard that we need to deal with threats on the inside as well. You know, whether we want to put it in an ordinal order, you know, saying which is more, which is less, you know, that, you know, we need to be able to walk and chew bubble gum at the same time and deal with these, because in the age we live in, the threats are coming from all different directions. All different directions. I mean, when you think about it, you know, you take anything. You take, for example, drugs. You know, we deal with a slaughter on the highway, people drinking, and that's legal. And then we have other issues with drugs coming across the border and people dying that way, taking fentanyl, and, you know, and terms. And so when it comes to when you said, you know, the threat is within, yes, the threat is within, it's without. Well, we have to be able to deal with all of these things. And when you know, dealing with one, the other one pops up. This is what is, you know, troublesome here, you know, in terms of what you mentioned in Ukraine. That's an issue that has to be dealt with in a certain way. And certainly the issues here. You know, look, I don't want to get highly political, but we're sending all that money to the Ukraine, right? And people are arguing, well, that should be spent here. But look, I'm old enough, and maybe you are. I know you're a teenager. But think about it. You know, every time they say, you know, well, let's spend it, does it really get spent here? You know what I'm saying? I mean,
right.
I wish it was the case. You know, they say, well, you know, we're sending food over there. There's kids going hungry here. Well, are those kids really? Is the money being diverted here? So that's another issue, but I think mm-hmm. for the moment, I think the nation is split, and it's horrible. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, this mm-hmm. on top of everything else is horrific. I mean, to peel away the veneer here and get at what happened in Texas is a very multifaceted issue. You know, it has to do with mental illness. It has to do with guns. It has to do with, you know, parents noticing something and seeking help. Do kids get help? You know, it's a very complex issue. And, you know, quite frankly, how do you get to the most important thing with dealing it? Quite frankly, I think we need better leadership. That's from both parties. I'm not talking with Republican or Democrat here. The nation needs to heal, and you need someone. And quite frankly, the president, and I don't think the vice president has been doing a very good job of this, has to be able to get out there and bring the nation together and mourn with this. You know, yes, it's an issue we have to deal with how did this person get a gun? You know, how does someone, you know, what we have all of this? I mean, let me put it in perspective this way. Yes, this is horrible. Yes, it's horrible. But think about this. Each weekend in Chicago and in other big cities, mm-hmm. kids are killed, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much does that make the newspaper headline? What gets done about that? What's the talk about that, right?
Yeah.
This is something we need to address. And unfortunately, you know, in the media, and you're in the media, you know that expression, if it bleeds, it leads.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and right. That's what happens. I mean, there are other killings. What about the poor kid who's laying in his bedroom in a city in some area, in an urban area, and a bullet goes through and kills him? You know?
Yeah.
The tragedy involved in that. So, but I think now with reporting the way it is, with social media and quick access to television, to this, I think it comes into your living room much quicker than it did in the past, and,
yep.
and it impacts us much more. Wouldn't you agree?
Yep. But not just that, though. I remember now I I'm going to sound like my parents sounded probably, but in my day, you know, but
yeah, yeah.
when
back
I was growing
day.
Up, yeah. So when I was growing up, we watched the news in my house. In fact, it was almost kind of a mandatory thing. And part mm-hmm. of it was because in school, in social studies, you were subject to have a topic called current events. And you
mm-hmm,
talked
mm-hmm.
about what was going on. Now, the thing is that when we sat and watched the news, I wasn't just left there to sit and watch everything that was going on. There was a discussion about what was watched. We tend to use our TVs as babysitters.
Correct.
So we have people, we have our children just sit down and watch stuff, and we don't help them process what they're watching. So it's not even a matter of what you're getting, and I shouldn't say just watching in terms of television, but also social media, also radio. You know, we need to help our children because they are still children. They are not fully formed adults. We need to help our children process what is going on. And that's where that element that is missed a lot now, the family dinner table,
that's that element
that's missing that helped with that process, because you had discussions, and even if you didn't discuss it at the dinner table, it was like, okay, we're going to discuss this later, you know, we're going to discuss this before you go to bed, but we had discussions. No one wants to talk to anybody anymore. They just want to be left to their devices, literally, and no one wants to engage in a discussion, partially because people don't want to disagree. They don't want, you know, they want, if I have a discussion with you, apparently I want you to agree with me with everything that I say. But that is just not the way we are as human beings, and we have to learn how to accept that, and we have to learn how to process disagreements in a civilized and healthy manner. And that is portion. There's so many components, you know, and so I think that is part of the issue right there. The other thing, in my opinion, is that we're too vocal and feel too strongly about some of the wrong things, and we need to get back to being strong and vocal about other things, like having, if you're going to have sex ed in school, you need to be able to have religion in school, or spirituality, or moral formation of some sort in school. That's my opinion. But we need people that are going to fight as hard to have that in school as sex education. Or you need to take them all out.
Well, listen, hearing you, what you just said now is a breath of fresh air. Unfortunately, it's not what other people think in, for example, universities and in schools. You're 100% right. You're beginning to go back to a traditional type of structure with family discussions and things like that, which we've moved away from. If you take a look at the concept of family, the concept of religion, all of that has changed dramatically. You want, in other words, the traditional types of way of training up a child. I mean, I see it at the university. You know, when I first started at the university many, many, many years ago, there was room for raucous debate. That's gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally gone.
What colleges and universities
were
the grounds for. You know,
exactly.
To learn and grow and debate certain issues and topics and come away from it with, you may not change your mind, but maybe have a better understanding of why the person who thinks and feels the opposite have a better understanding of why they do.
But getting back to what you said and drilling down on it, when you mentioned the religion, you know, yes, that's been taken out of the classroom. It's been taken out of society. If you read all the polls nationally, Pew and every that, worldwide phenomena, religion is a sort of a thing of the past with the younger generations. You know, you go into churches, you see older people. You don't see younger people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, in some areas you do. But you're talking about a traditional way of looking at things, and I think what's happened is technology has interacted, you know, with the family and that, and you're right. It's a form of babysitting. You know, when it started out, you know, with TV dinners, if you want to go back historically,
mm-hmm.
you know, someone would, you know, instead of having, you know, the cooking in the family, you drop something in the oven, you take it out, you put it on a tray, and you sit the kids in front of the television, you go about your business, and the kids are babysit that way. You're absolutely right. Now, if you start to move that farther and farther into the future, as we have, then you have, iPads, you have smartphones. You know, if you go into a restaurant 30, 40, 50 years ago, or even 25, 30 years, and you saw a family, they'd be sitting there eating. They might not have been having a happy conversation, but they would be eating. I challenge people now, when you go into a restaurant and you see a family, where if you see a traditional family, a father, a mother, and you see three kids or so, you go into that restaurant, what do you see? You see the kids looking at their phone or playing something, right? Or playing something on an iPad, right? Total and so we moved away from the traditional ways of communicating through, for example, a newspaper to television. It's moved beyond television now. Everybody's walking around with their own set, which is their phone, and they're communicating that. They're blogging, they're Instagram, all of these types of social, media communication systems. It's not through a mother yelling out to a child playing in the street, "Come on home for dinner." You know, that doesn't exist anymore. Kids don't play in the streets. Kids don't play out in the field, you know? So I agree with you. I agree with you, but I don't know how we grab that back. I don't know how we go back to that. What's troublesome to me is someone like myself and then yourself who grew up in an era when you had a lot of that, you know, to see all the modern advances that we have today and not being able to use them in a way which would be helpful, not harmful. You know, what's funny is in New York, they removed in New York City all the old telephone booths from the street where people would, you know, put in a coin and dial up. And so
last one was removed, was it yesterday or today or something?
Last night on the news, it was hysterical. They had like a 7-8-year-old kid walking down the street with a parent, and then the reporter asked the kid, "What is that?" And the kid was looking at the phone, like, you know, phone hanging on a cord, and didn't know, what is that device? And the kid had no idea what it was. You know, or to dial a phone, you know, a rotary phone. So, you know, yes, you're right. I mean, you know, we're trying to look at all what's happening now, but I think a result of what's happening now is the breakdown. I agree with you on this. I get a lot of, you know, flack from my colleagues. You're too conservative about it. It's a lack because we moved away from religion. We moved away from family values. We move away from discussion at the dinner table. And I hate to say this. I mean, please, to your listeners, don't think I'm an animal. I was afraid growing up of that belt buckle, that strap. You know, I hate to say that. Right? I mean,
I totally agree with you because I was actually over one of my cousins the other day and we were at dinner and we were talking about, I guess you could say, fear of God from our parents. And my cousin and I were both only kids, so we were close. Our mothers were sisters. And we were talking about the different, I guess you could say, tools that were used to discipline us when we came up. I don't think either one of us grew up very badly. Neither one of us got in trouble. And definitely neither one of us was out there shooting other children. Elementary school children, and my question, I guess, is: so is what we know as our society, or what we hoped to have been as our society, where we're free to walk around and do what we want and say what we want and go out to dinner and go to the movies and go wherever or go and learn things. Are we closing in on being, and I may be phrasing this wrong, but a police state of sort where we all have to, and before I say this, I need to let everybody know I'm not against masks at all, because I think if you're wearing a mask, that means you may care something about me because you're protecting me a little bit when you wear a mask. But are we in a situation where, okay, we have to all wear masks all the time. We have to all carry a phone all the time for the simple reason that we need to be vigilant having the camera phone in case someone ends up getting shot unjustly by law enforcement, or someone ends up getting shot unjustly, period, because there's people out there that have guns that should not have guns. I mean, are we in that phase of our society where we are constantly having to look over our shoulder all the time and just end up being miserable human beings?
Unfortunately, you know, before COVID and some of this, I would have said to you, no way. That's what makes this such a beautiful society, the freedom here. But, you know, it's you have to train children in that to be vigilant. Unfortunately, you know, we have that slogan, you know, see something, say something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that didn't exist 30, 40, 50 years ago, but certainly
mm-hmm.
not to the extent that it does now. It impacts every, you know, look, I remember, and I grew up outside of New York, but when I was in New York, when I was a child, I remember going on the subways and sleeping and not being fearful that someone's going to come in and shoot me or hit me over the head. You know what I'm saying? But
right.
I think the society we live in today, you know, you raise a very important question that we need to think about. You know, do we move to such a condition that it's a police state where we're, you know, where we lock down everything, we harden the target, so to speak, where it takes away our freedoms? You know, Benjamin Franklin had a saying about that, you know, you got to balance the, you know, security with freedom. But I cannot say that this is not something that you need to watch out for today. You know, it because you see it, you know, and the media plays it up, whether it's in your car. You know, we talk about road rage, right? If
mm-hmm.
someone cuts you off and you say something wrong to someone, you know, or walking down the street, or we see now in terms of the big cities where people of Asian descent are being attacked or you know, others, you know, just because of who they are, you know, walking down the street and getting, you know, blindsided by someone or on the subway. We had an incident here in New York that probably made national headlines where we had someone
right.
go, you know, didn't take an Uber. He got on the train. He was going to meet somebody from brunch, and someone walked on the train mumbling and shot and killed him. You know, this is an everyday occurrence. And the fact that it gets played out in the media 24/7, you know, doesn't help. You know, there's a thing in the media what we call B-roll. And B-roll is where there's this constant, you know, running over the same particular scene over and over again. So if you were watching television yesterday on any of the major stations or cable and you watched, you saw the situation where they showed the gunman entering the school, and that was played over and over again. Or you saw parents rushing in hysterical to find their kids, and you see it over and over again. You know, and it's the same thing. Think about this. I think I can encapsulate what you're talking about with this. George Floyd laying there with the knee on his neck, right? Think about that, what he was feeling at that time, and that B-roll of that image being shown over and over and over again, right? You know, this is the society we live in. And so I wish I could say to you, no, you know, you don't. You can walk down the street oblivious, you know, listening to your phone with AirPods in your ear and that, but you have to be vigilant in today's
mm-hmm.
society, right? I mean, you know, and then you know, because the media puts these images out there that, look, when you were growing up, or when I was growing up, and I think I'm older than you, when I was growing up, how many murders did you see? You know, you had to read about it. Today, the average kid, by the time they're 18 years old, from the phone, from playing games, how many thousands and thousands of encounters that are violent, right?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have that impression 30, 40 years ago, right? I mean, when I played with soldiers, when I was a kid, they were probably made out of tin or lead, and they were poisoning you that way. But I had soldiers, and they were inanimate pieces of metal, and I would put them in the sand, move them around. Think about that, and say bang, 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 right? Or I would have a six shooter on the side where I put caps in. I don't think kids would know what, you know, and they would go bang, bang, bang. Today, with the video games you have and the reality that you see on those types of things, how do you compare that? How do you compare? And it's every facet of our society. You know, I'm shocked sometimes, and I bet you are too. I turned on television the other day, and I heard the F word on this program. I was shocked that, you know, and this wasn't, you know, R-rated. This was a regular, they were dropping the F-bomb over and over again. I mean, you know, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I don't think that's appropriate.
Well,
you know?
Also, too, but isn't that against FCC regulations, too, to do that?
Not anymore. No, not anymore. Not anymore. They looked the other way, because this was on, you know, a major station on television. I was, and it was a movie, and it wasn't bleep, 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 that. It was just those words were constant. And it was on, you ready? It was on a PBS station. So, you know, public broadcast.
You used to get, you used to get fined,
you know,
though, if you were doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, and then you think in terms of pornography, what's out there. You think in terms of all of this. You know, is it good? In a lot of ways, we've moved ahead and we've become better. But there's a lot of things that we need to catch up on. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you talked about traditional family values at the dinner table, parents raising up their kids, having a say, putting religion back. It shouldn't be that you can't pray in public. I mean, you know, all of these things, I think, have impacted us. And but again, when I talk with a lot of my colleagues at the university, they don't agree with that. They think that's what causes this. That's what causes this. And quite frankly, I don't think that's the case. You know,
and the thing is, we need to have people that are bold enough to disagree with those people. But part of our problem is people are scared to take those kind of risks.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? And they forget that the people that laid the groundwork initially for us being able to, I don't know if you know of or remember the stories about how Christians initially used to have to communicate by drawing the fish in the sand. Do you know about
exactly.
that? Yeah. Yes. If you think you count on someone, you think they're a Christian, you draw your half of the fish, and that's why you see all of the fish symbols on the card. Yeah, and I draw my half and stuff like that. And that's how you symbolize me. I don't want to go back to that ever again, and I don't think I will. But we need enough people who of faith or of spirituality. I mean, and you don't have to necessarily be religious, okay? But
exactly.
You have to have some sort of moral compass, and we need enough of those people to step forward and call what is right, right, and what is wrong, wrong. And do it. We got to do it with our kids early enough, because we need to realize that the shooters of like Parkland and the shooter in Texas and some of these other shooters, they are, what is this guy, 18 yesterday?
Right. Yes.
These guys are not old. These are not old. These aren't middle age. These are people that are barely out of school, out of their formative years, that are committing these crimes. And that's why I'm saying we've got to kind of dial it back. We got to go back a little further, because it's not – we talk about, for example, gun control and everything like that. But we got to go back a little further. And you know, I also heard this thing about the argument about guns don't kill people, people kill people, or whatever. It's a combination of the two. So the guns need to be regulated.
You don't have it, yeah.
But people need to be regulated. People need to learn how to. I'm going back, and I may be, you know, speaking where people think I'm speaking out of term. But people need to go back to disciplining their kids and stop being afraid of their kids. and being reminded that they're the parent, they're the adult, and the child is not fully formed, so don't expect them to make rational decisions all the time, because you have to make those decisions for them or work with them with those decisions, okay? But you can't let them go off and make decisions like getting a gun and going to an elementary school and killing 19 kids.
No, I think you're right, and I think what you said encapsulates it, because I think what you have at discussions at high levels at universities, they would talk, for example, about, well, let's talk about the red flag laws, which allow, you know, which is somewhat different in the states' rights as opposed to the Constitution. Well, the point is, all of that is law. All of that is logic. But if you don't have the basic building blocks before, as you said, you don't have the right spirituality, you don't have the right bringing up, you don't have the right example at home, and that, I think all of that, you can't. Those types of argumentations built on a frame that's not solid, that means what I'm saying is what you just said. By having spiritual, having family values, having that type of tradition, it can't happen, because then actually what you're doing is you might as well be training someone who doesn't come out of humanity, or I hate to use it, an animal. You give them that, those humans. So I think what we've done today, we've removed away the traditional things we both of us are talking about, the family values, the spirituality, that type of thing, that decency, you know. And quite frankly, you know, the dogma of the church, that's fine. But if you want to have a real come to Jesus moment, it's the love and the forgiveness and the beauty individually and through the family and building it up that way. It's not through the organized religion itself, but it's through those values. And I think that's what is the basis of Christianity. Not so much the dogma surrounding it, but the basic spiritual values. Don't you agree?
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
We're going to take a quick break. Oh, yes, for sure. We're going to take a quick break. We're here with Dr. Harvey Wolf Kushner. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions or comments, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back. Does it appear the long arm of the law is working against you instead of for you? Whom do you call when the boys in blue are pursuing you? When the wrong person behind bars may end up being you? With over 40 years combined legal expertise, Anderson & Welch bring to bear a smart, sound, sensible defense of those caught in what may be the unrelenting grip of the legal system. Turn to Anderson & Welch first to get ahead of trouble, not fall into it, by calling 561-832-3386. That's 561-832-3386. That's Anderson & Welch Law Firm online at andersonandwelch.com. Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are talking domestic terrorism, especially in the aftermath of the Texas shooting that killed 19 students and two teachers. And I'm here with Dr. Harvey Wolf Kushner, who's a professor of cybercrime and terrorism at Long Island University. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944. I want to ask you, Dr. Kushner, about the House passing the legislation recently that would create domestic terrorism offices. Tell me what you know about this, and tell me what your thoughts are, and whether or not it will have any kind of impact on maybe a situation like this.
Well, you know, first of all, when we talk about domestic terrorism, there is a debate in this country. What really do we mean by that? There was a fear prior to most recent that if we were to label Americans, people living here who are citizens of this country, born here, as terrorists, we would somehow impact on free speech. In other words, the right to be extreme, but, you know, without yelling fire in a movie house, but, you know, quite frankly, say things that are obnoxious, but having the right to say that. So there was always that fear of labeling right wing or extreme thought in this country as terrorism. This is not to say that we've had groups in the United States that haven't committed horrific acts. For example, the Ku Klux Klan, one. We've had neo-Nazis in this country. We've always had a tradition of, are you familiar with, your listeners, of April 19th? April 19th was always a date that resonated with extremists in the United States. In fact, most recently on April 19th, 1995, you might remember, Timothy McVeigh put a rider truck in front of the Alpha P. Mura building in Oklahoma City and blew it up, wanting to actually start a race war in this country. And he killed 168 individuals in the building, including a daycare center there with, I think, 19 children died that day. So that was a horrific act of what we would call domestic terrorism. But up until now, we haven't really labeled these acts by these extremists as terrorist acts in fear of tamping down people's rights to expression, no matter how distasteful they were. I think the new legislation, I think, goes beyond that and will somehow label groups like that as domestic terrorists. Because your listeners might be shocked to know that up until this point in time, the Klan was not, you might talk about them as being terrorist organizations, but the laws which they were prosecuted under did not find them as quote-unquote domestic terrorists. And so there is a debate. And you know, look, when we say terrorism, you have domestic terrorism, you have international terrorism, you have what we call transnational terrorism. But domestic terrorism is perpetrated by these extremist groups still is a very gray area and up for debate. And I don't think that the legislation that passed now really necessarily will, address these extremist acts in this country in a manner in which we'd be able to get a handle on them and be able to do something that would deter those acts in the future.
So let me ask you, because you talked about like organized groups or organized terrorism. And in these instances, though, they keep pointing out that it looks like it was an isolated incident. But the influences for these shooters appear to be coming off of social media. Is there anything that is being looked into to determine whether or not, the direction, the influence, the mindset leads back to maybe something organized on social media, but doesn't necessarily demonstrate itself as organized? You know, it's demonstrating itself more as isolated individuals coming forward and committing these acts.
Okay, let me try to address this way. First, you're using the term now when you're saying what happened in Texas, what happened in Connecticut Parkland School or in Florida. I don't consider those terrorist acts. You know,
okay.
Let's put it this way. When we're talking about terrorism as what happened on 9/11, or what happened, when our embassies were bombed in East Africa. Academics and the FBI and others, when we're looking at terrorism in that way, we're looking at terrorism and defining it in this sense, that someone is trying to change some political or social structure. In other words, you know, the reason why they blew up this building or the reason why they killed this individual, because they're trying to make a political or social statement. They're trying to make someone do something that they ordinarily wouldn't want to do. So that's where the definition of terrorism lies. Now, there's a lot of disagreements about subtleties, but that's the basic. When we're talking about what happened in Texas, this was a lone person, right? But it's a terrible and it's a terroristic in a sense. We're using it in terms of defining what happens. And that, it's horror. It's terror. It's holy terror. It's that. But it's not in the conceptual framework of changing something politically. You see what I'm saying? I give you another example. When we were involved in Iraq and the Spanish government was involved in helping us fight in Iraq, the elements in their society said that if the, during the election, if the government would continue to support America, we're going to blow something up. And what they did is they blew something up, the railroad trains there in Spain, and then the electorate went in the other way and they elected someone else for government. And so that is what traditional terrorism does. It by an act of horror or a terrible act, so to speak, or by to change some political or social. This kid, you know, wasn't trying to do that. It was a horrible, it was an act of terror. We were terrorized by it, but it's not in the traditional academic or in the political of an act of terrorism. You see what I'm saying? So I think.
Yes, but I mean, I think part of it might be that, okay, I'm too young to have access to a plane or pilot lessons or whatever to be able to secure a plane full of people and run it into a building. But I can do this with what
I have in terms
of my resources and capabilities. And, you know, the ideology, what I'm still saying is maybe even though he's doing it as one person, maybe the ideology is coming from social media or somewhere, you know, and forming this these individuals, even though they're not in a group per se, maybe a group. Is forming these ideologies in these people?
Well, you're absolutely right. And what the terminology we use for this and what you're talking about, you know, we have different ways of talking. Some people would call these freelancers. Some would say lone wolves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And individuals who get influenced by going on the World Wide Web or going on the Internet and finding something and then acting in that way. We see that people acting in the name of Al-Qaeda. Now, terrorist organizations themselves, whether it be inside the United States or outside, they might put out literature, they might have expressions, they might have a website, they might have newsletters, whatever, and they want to encourage people to go to these different places, pick up the knowledge, and then act individually like that. You're absolutely right about that. Now, the question is, let's say the shooter here in Texas, if he was radicalized in some way by going to a social media site that was putting out this type of information and he then decided to act upon it himself, yes, you consider him a terrorist. Now, this might, this probably would be the case, okay, what happened in Buffalo, because it, probably this lone person, he probably was a loner. He probably didn't interact with other groups, but he picked up that from, you're right, from possibly social media, and he started to make his own posts. He started to have his own blog. So, yes, that's true, and we're plagued by that today. That's what we call freelance. That's what we call individual or lone wolf type of terrorism, these spin-offs. And quite frankly, a lot of these organized terror organizations, they want that. In other words, they put out their information on social media. They embedded sometimes in literature that other people pick that up and act upon it. So, no, you're right. This is a growing problem. No, you're absolutely right.
Right, because what happens is if some individual takes up their mantle, they can say, well, I'm not responsible because that person decided – on their own to do X, Y, and Z. You know, we were expressing our opinion.
Well, that's the issue that we have. Free speech, First Amendment. I mean, that really is tough, what you're saying. But I hear what you're saying. You're saying, well, we didn't tell, but again, this is something that has to be dealt with in some way by law and by, you know, in academia, figuring out ways in which some information out there on the World Wide Web, in the media, on the dark web, is dangerous. Look, we don't regulate that. That is a problem. We regulate, for example, we regulate the phone, but we don't regulate the web. And there's a lot of stuff. Look, we have so many instances of what you're talking about. For example, we had Earth Liberation Front, which talked about people who were destroying the earth. Okay, we had groups that were animal rights groups like PETA and that. And then we had a case out in Long Island many years ago in which Earth Liberation Front was concerned with the wetlands here, and where they were building houses. And, you know, they put on their website that this is destroying the ecology of the area, blah, 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 blah. And so one impressionable high school student in his basement came upon the website, came upon what they were saying there, and he decided to act. And what he did is he went in and he burned down this whole complex that was being built. And so they removed themselves saying, look, that we were just saying, yeah, we didn't tell him to do this. But look, he was convicted and he was put away as an act of terrorism because he torched this whole building complex. So, you know, you're absolutely right. This is an issue that we haven't had. We can't, you know, deal with, especially social media. You have a lot of groups that put out their information out there and say, you know, and people, impressionable people, will pick it up, and then they'll go in and they'll shoot up a church service, or they'll go into a supermarket like this person did, you know, traveling 100, 200 miles, went to Buffalo into a minority neighborhood and shot up a food store. So, no, you're right. This is very, very important problem that we have to deal with, and we didn't have to years ago because, quite frankly, many, many years ago, before social media, before the web, before internet, the terrorist groups didn't spin off these freelancers like they are now. You're absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. This is a problem. How do you get into the heads of all these individuals? Look, if you have a large group of 100 people who act, you know, you could infiltrate that group. You could. But when you start to split off these lone wolves, these individuals become radicalized. How do you deal with that? And then the question becomes, what laws do you put in effect to regulate freedom of speech to say things? This is a major problem. You're absolutely right about that, and I don't have the solution to it.
Well, I was going to ask you too. You probably may not have the solution to this either, but I was wondering, do you have any insight into the mindset of what prompts a person to leave their own community and to drive hours, whatever, into someone else's community? This happened with Buffalo. This happened. There was a shooting in California with a Presbyterian church, I believe. I think it even happened to, I forget the name of the guy, but it was an incident that happened around the same time that the George Floyd murder trial was going on. What is in that type of mindset that makes someone leave their own community and go and cause destruction in someone else's?
One question, and let me tell you how I would approach that. You know, we do studies on people. We could take a look at them. We could take a look at mass murderers, spree killers, serial killers, and we could find certain common traits that they have. Maybe they were abused as children. We're hearing about this Texas shooter that he was bullied, okay? That he was bullied, that he was a bedwetter, or that he lit fires, or that he tortured animals, or he had a broken home. And we could come up with a theory about that. But then I say to you, there's so many kids who come from a broken home who might have done something and grow up to be perfectly fine. We don't have yet the scientific ability to have that. We don't have the models that we could get. For example, we don't have the DNA model. You know, we're basing a lot of our observations on commonality between these individuals. Like let's take the shooter here. Let's take the shooter here in Texas. Let's take the fellow who that drove all the mileage to go to Buffalo and shoot up. And let's say we find some commonalities in them, that they both drank milk as a kid. They both might have been bullied. But then again, we could get populations of other kids like that who then grow up to be fine individuals. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing. People come to poverty and go one way. People go another way. But I think the answer is getting back to something you said in the beginning. I think the more we move away from the traditional values which we had in family and in religion and training up kids in school with learning ABCs and spirituality and all of that, I think we open ourselves up to more and more of this. Because I think a lot of these kids who grow up to do what you were talking about, I don't think have that. Although there are others, I just said to you, who grow up to be fine individuals, you know? But
right.
We don't have that. We don't have that ability yet to determine. Maybe, you see, my hope is that, now this is going to sound weird, my hope is that with technology going the way it is, and with artificial intelligence and with computers, that eventually we're going to be able to somehow get into the very DNA in the individuals which would be able to determine this, you know, connecting it to a gene. Now, this sounds awfully horrible, but that might have some validity if science could get into that. But as of now, to answer you and tell you that I have, because the people who supposedly track that, the FBI, the behavioral science unit, look into these spree killers, they don't have that. We do see situations in which the attention of these kids were called to the authorities and they didn't do anything about it. But there's so many other instances where they do and nothing happens. I mean, you know, quite frankly, you know how many tips come in to law enforcement on a daily basis? Tens of thousands. How do you act on all of them? And then when you're looking at a population the size of this country, 350, 360 million, how do you get into the weeds of every individual? And every individual becomes, sad. I mean, you're raising important questions, but I feel at a loss to be able to answer them to you, other than saying get into some, scientific, scientific science fi answer, or the other one would be let's go back to some of the basics. Let's go back to family. Let's go back to some of that. I think that would answer some of the spirituality for others who would be able to better deal when we have a situation like this occur. But I don't see a world we're going to be able to live in the future where we're going to be able to rule out this type of horror. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'd be wrong to tell you that we would, right? I mean, I don't have a solution to that. Because if I did, wouldn't I try to bring that to the forefront? I think that's the problem we have today. But I think this horror is being brought to more and more people than it would have if it happened 100 years ago. Aren't I right about that? In other words, now instantaneously, information is put out there, right? You know, it doesn't occur in the vacuum, and that impacts the whole world, right? And
right.
I think one of the critical issues you raised is, are we reaching a critical mass here where it's becoming 24/7 of our day, when at least 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you might have read about that, you might have seen it, but you could escape it. But now I think what you're telling me is you can't escape it. It's with you constantly. Because if you don't turn on the television, am I right? It's on your phone. And you might even be getting a text about it, like I do. I'm into so many different apps that when breaking news occurs, I get it immediately, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Amber alerts, all that type of stuff. You know, you get all kinds of stuff now.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, this is welcome to the modern world we live in. You know, this is I don't have the solution to it. I would hope though that the technology that is constantly growing at exponential rates will help us deal with this. Maybe there are answers to artificial intelligence that we don't even think of, because we see those in medicine. Maybe we'll see it, you know, in the psychiatry of medicine, as opposed to just, you know, coming up with a booster shot. You know, I think we need to deal with the brain and human relations. But if anything from our conversation today, you know, I always love talking to you, because I think you hit the nail on the head with the spirituality and family values and traditional way of being, you know, dealing with your neighbor, I think are lost in our modern society. And I think we need to bring those things back. And I think, you know, we need to have a come to Jesus moment with that, because if we don't,
definitely.
I think we're walking down we're heading to Armageddon. I hate to say this, but you know, I that's why I really love talking to you. We should bring out the spirituality in me that sometimes, you know, gets lost when I'm sitting in the academic classroom.
So we only got a couple of minutes left. Real quick, I wanted to ask you about gun control or weapons control or whatever. Do you think that policies in terms of regulating guns, in terms of having to have, let's say, background checks, or I would even say also having to have official training where, you know, there's like some sort of paper trail or some sort of record of this person purchased a gun, this person went through X training on this type of weapon, so that, I mean, when you pull up, you know, their profile, you see what their history is with weapons. And also, so I'm wondering, will something like that, and also any type of regulation with regards to body armor, I mean, you know, do you think that those types of things may deter some of this at all?
Well, let me say this to you, okay? You go and you buy a gun, right? An automobile, to go out and drive an automobile, don't you have to get training? Don't you have to get a license, right? You get on a road with an automobile. Well, I think we need to begin a dialogue to look at it that way to some extent. I think background checks, I think, are totally necessary. And quite frankly, if you look at, let's take the NRA. The NRA was formed after the Civil War, really, as an organization to teach gun safety, teach people how to use weapons. I think there's a responsibility. I don't think we should take the right of an individual who is mentally capable and who is not committed to crimes and all that. They have a right to, but I think there should be some regulation in terms of background checks. I think clearly there needs to be. And I think we have to address, the red flag laws in states that, you know, if someone is walking around threatening to kill people and has a mental issue, I think that needs to be called to the attention of the medical community or of law enforcement or other things like that. And a lot of states now have these. They're all different from different states, you know, who could invoke that. But I think that is totally necessary. And I don't think that in and of itself is a violation of the Second Amendment rights. I think if you polled America, I think 85-90% would agree with that.
Yeah, Professor Kushner, I wish we had more time. I thank you for coming back again today. Really appreciate it. Look forward to having you again. Thanks so much.
Okay, you take care, Richard. Bye.
Take care. Be well. And thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Thank you for joining us. Be well, be safe, be blessed. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
Thank you.